People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Many times you've heard me raving about books, and I'm a great lover of books. But the book that I'm going to be talking about today is particularly special, not only because of its content, but because of the way it's been produced. It's called New History of South Africa. And what's interesting about it is it starts with recent discoveries about the origin of humanity in Africa from prehistory and the first peoples. Then it takes us through the great migrations of both pre-colonial and colonial times, and later the discovery of diamonds and gold, and the origins of African and Afrikaner nationalism. It examines the South African War, the two world wars, and the impact of a growing working class, along with the many forms of resistance against apartheid, culminating in the transition to majority rule. And it ends with an exploration of the first three democratic presidencies, and, importantly, the difficult dynamics of a new society. The book, I'm going to say it a few times in this interview, it's a magnificent volume, has been edited by three people: Herman Guillaume, who is Professor of Political Studies at the University of Cape Town; Bernard Mbenga, Professor of History at Northwest University, currently Extraordinary Professor at the same institution; and Bill Nassen, Emeritus Professor of History at Stellenbosch University and a Fellow of the Stellenbosch Institute for Advanced Study. And I've been trying to get them in, and I've managed to get Bill Nassen in. And Bill, it's a great honor and pleasure to have you here, so welcome.
Thank you, Rodney. It's a great pleasure and privilege to be sitting here across from
oh,
you.
Oh, thank you, Will,
in
you
in FMR.
Well, that's a good start.
That's a good start, isn't it?
Are you an FMR listener?
As a veteran FMR listener and a veteran Rodney Trudgeon listener.
Oh, goodness
back
me.
Back to the SAFM and good Classic grief. FM and so on.
Oh, dear. Yes. Well, let's not talk about
well,
that.
You know, we don't want this to turn into some sort of mutual appreciation
Absolutely.
Society.
But it's going to be very much appreciation to you, Herman and Bernard, for this really magnificent book. And did you have any idea it was going to look like this?
Because No. All you see when you're an editor or when you're a contributor, you get these white page proofs of whatever you've done. Mm-hmm. And in the case of editors, you get to see the whole book. But you actually have very little idea of what it's going to look like because changes are being made during the course of production and there are people who are designing the cover, and you often get sent a few options, you know, what about this, that or the other, but the final choice, you can recommend something, but someone further up the food chain can decide differently. Different colors. And so I was astonished at how beautifully it's been
produced. Yeah, it really has. And it's
a
hardback. And one of the other things is that the various sections of the long history are color-coded, which actually makes it quite easy to navigate.
Yes. But, because I think it's, if I can say, I mean, I think it because it's good with the book because, you know, the book is a lot about South Africa and its movement. And the books, I don't think anyone is expected to read that cover to cover at one sitting. It's a sort of tableau into which you can...
Oh, that's a good way of putting it, a tableau,
think, you know,
right.
Tableau vivant. And then you can just look at the color-coded pages and decide what's your favorite color this week.
Okay, well, I suppose that's one way of getting
One way of doing it, you know. Better than paint by numbers.
Well, exactly. Yes. I'm going to ask a slightly sarcastic question now, or even I'm going to be the devil's advocate. Mm. The new history of South Africa, that's quite sort of almost arrogant. There's so many history books on South Africa. I know that this one takes a different view, but did you come by the title easily?
No, I mean the book is a updating and reworking of a book called New History of South Africa, which came out in 2007. So it's, you know, it's 15 years on from that. Mm-hmm. And I think the key thing about the original book and about this book is to get away from using the sort of prefix the, as if it's a, as
I,
if, you know.
I wondered why you didn't have
yes,
that.
Yes, I think.
Because then it makes it seem as though this is the one.
This is it. This is some authority, you know, this is a book that gives an authoritative, definitive stamp on how we should understand
Oh, that is because I couldn't work out why you didn't call it the new history of South Africa.
And I think new history is partly because the people, all the people who've contributed, and as you know, the great many contributors, they're not all professionally trained historians. So I think it's to convey the sense that there's an expansive view of historical understanding and writing, so the people in the book who are, have different backgrounds, you know, journalism and politics.
Well, it is. There's a huge number of contributors, actually.
Yes.
Were they invited to contribute?
Yes, no, they were approached to contribute.
Certain chapters or certain
chapters.
Essays.
And the wonderful people at the publishers did a lot of that, thankfully, because, you know, something of this magnitude, as I mean, the enormous number of people who've contributed. It's a bit like herding cats. I mean, the thought of of having to do it, having to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Tafelberg was the publisher.
And Tafelberg was the publisher, yes, okay. Who did the first new history of South Africa.
So did they actually commission these people?
They actually commissioned.
They knew Herman and Bert.
Yes, and Herman, and I was roped in to be an editor for this particular book.
Okay.
I was a contributor to the very first 2007 new history.
And you've written a few introductions.
And I've written sort of epilogue and introductions and chapter material.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about it in more detail to whet people's appetite, because I was so, when I opened it, when it landed on my desk, I thought, goodness me, this is something for the library that would be much, much loved and appreciated and paged through.
Yes. I mean, I think I have to say for local publishing, I mean, it's astonishingly well produced.
I mean,
it sets a very high standard. Yes.
So if you're listening and you, even if you just go into a shop to look at it, you'll soon be persuaded to buy it. Bill, what's your first piece of music today for us?
My first piece of music is Leonard Cohen, Hallelujah. I've been a Leonard Cohen fan for as long as I've breathed, I think. I'm not a particularly religious person, but that particular Leonard Cohen song is something that gets one closest to some feeling of Sunday morning epiphany, just before the whiskey or just before a glass of red wine.
Now I've heard there was a secret chord that David played and it pleased the Lord, but you don't really care for music, do you? It goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, the major lift, the baffled king composing Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah.
I couldn't feel, so I tried to touch. I've told the truth, I didn't come to fool you. And even though it all went wrong, I'll stand before the Lord of Song with nothing on my tongue but hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
That's a famous piece. You can almost call it an anthem, can't you, Bill?
Yes.
Hallelujah.
Yes, yes, yes. And done by various artists, and which is absolutely a great tribute to
any musician.
To any musician, and to good old Leonard, you know.
And that was the first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, who is Emeritus Professor in History, Bill Nassen. And he is one of three editors of a fantastic new book called New History of South Africa, along with Herman Guillaume and Bernard Mbenga. You know, one of the questions I've been dying to ask is, very often when you think of a book of the history of South Africa, it begins with the Dutch landing here, Van Riebeek, 1652, all that. But this goes right back to the 300s.
Oh, yes.
How did you, I mean, how does one find material?
Well, I think you do that by thinking about who the potential contributors are. Yeah. So the early sections are done by people with archaeological training and expertise, and it's to get away from that sense of the history of South Africa starts with its colonial beginnings, and to try to get back into the very early peopling of this part of the subcontinent.
And let alone this part of the world, because there's a line in here, a whole thing saying, everyone on the planet is African.
Is African, yes, that's right, yes. And that everyone in South Africa is a migrant of one form or another, which I think is a very helpful way to think of countries, you know.
Yes, yes.
You could tell Boris Johnson, you know, Britain consists of migrants, is a country of migrants.
Well, indeed.
Over many centuries.
The Romans, centuries, and goodness knows who else.
Yes, so I think it's very helpful to.
But, I mean, I'm talking about here, you really go right back, early humans, the hunter-gatherers, the Khoi pastoralists, Iron Age farming, the second millennium. It's very interesting. I have not read this book. It's going to take, as you said, it's not the sort of book you read from cover to cover.
No.
You choose a period or an era, I think. But the other thing then, with this early writing, as you've answered, those special people do it, but the illustrations as well, you've come up with some fantastic illustrations and photographs.
No, I think, again, you know, the publishers have to be complimented and acknowledged.
Yes.
You know, they have these sort of teams of highly specialized people who go out and find what would be appropriate for particular sections or particular
but
chapters.
But am I right in saying that not many books of the history of South Africa go that far back as
No, they don't, actually, no. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, books for general readers, you know, this book is targeted at general readers. I mean, that they're more scholarly, more narrow academic books.
Yes.
Which would give you the deeper early history. I mean, the Cambridge History of South Africa, with which I was also involved, will give you those sort of early origins. But it's a book written principally for a much more narrow kind of.
But it could also be used as a scholarly book.
Schools. I mean, I think that it's quite a difficult. You know, these books are quite difficult to do because you. not sort of, to use that phrase, trying not to dumb down, but
no,
of course, you're also
yes.
writing for that sort of mythical category, the interested general reader.
Exactly.
So in my case, I'm not much more than a general reader. So I try to write for myself.
Written or as you said, the Cambridge
yes.
history, but also Springboks on the Somme.
Yes.
The War for South Africa and History Matters, selected
yes.
writing. So you've written a lot about history of South Africa.
Yes, in through various sort of filters or lenses, So mm-hmm. I grew up like many precocious, overblown young boys or whatever, obsessed and fascinated by war. So I was always fascinated by the world wars and so on.
Oh, really? Is that where perhaps your interest in history
yes,
came
so
from?
I think my interest in history as a very young child, I think, started with the sort of fascination with war.
Mm-hmm.
So,
were you born here?
I was born here in Cape Town in Wynberg, and the 1960s, I mean, South Africa in the 60s. But one of the things about the 60s was that inflation was like very low and the rand was very strong. So I could buy endless Airfix model aircraft from the Second World War, and I could buy endless regiments of Airfix plastic soldiers to play with on the bedspread. So I grew up, with this obsession with wars. Not South Africa's Anglo-Boer War, that came later, but with the World Wars.
The World Wars, yes.
And I think that sort of stayed with me. And then in my up to my retirement, really, I taught war at UCT and at
my goodness,
and at the history of wars. So,
well, when you've retired at the wrong time with this whole Ukraine.
Well, yeah.
Thing
well,
started,
yes,
and,
yes.
Another whole.
But
I used to
teach the sort of South African War, and I used to teach the Spanish Civil War, and the First World War at UCT and at Stellenbosch.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Spanish Civil War mainly because people know, people know very little about that war.
Okay. So it was just, as I said earlier, it was a matter of course that you went into study history and...
Yeah, so I got into history. I got into history through sort of, through war. I mean,
fair enough.
I mean, I couldn't join the army. I'm a coward. So I had to find a distant way of engaging with war.
Writing about it and talking about it.
And yes. So Springboks on the Somme was about South African experience in the First World War, and then I got into that whole sort of First World War project because when I was a PhD student in Cambridge, I spent 2 years working on a fascinating project actually about First World War pensioners, and there were 250,000 files.
Gosh.
And I
of
had,
South African oh, pensioners.
No, British pensioners.
Oh, British pensioners, okay.
And I had to do, the job was to do a 10% random sample of the 250,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the rest were just burnt.
Wow.
Because there was no space to put them in an archive.
Yes.
So that just, deepened.
Your
deepened
fascination.
And my sort of ordinary experience of
gosh
of war.
Well, certainly wars are covered in this book.
Yes,
and the South African wars.
Pre-colonial conflicts as well. Yes.
We're going to have another piece of music now. Bill, what's your next
choice? My second piece is also a sort of Sunday music piece, although maybe...
After the whiskey and whiskey.
yes, shortly after, or shortly after lunch, and that's... Keith Jarrett's Köln concert, which I'm sure many listeners
what a famous know. Concert that was.
No,
as well,
yes,
it?
Remarkable piece of music and recorded by accident.
Yes,
I mean,
tell
so
me, how did it
goes.
Was recorded by accident? Do you know?
I don't
about
know.
This
I, as far as I know, I've been told this by a couple of people, including a sort of jazz historian, that the intention was not to record that concert. It was to record something else on that tour.
Oh.
And what ought to have been recorded wasn't. And this one just happened to be recorded by someone who decided off his bat
and
it's become a great classic.
A cult
Keith Jarrett is the most, yeah.
Okay, here we go with an excerpt from the Köln concert with Keith Jarrett. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
There you are, an excerpt from the Colton concert featuring Keith Jarrett. And that was the second choice of my guest on People of Note this week here on Fine Music Radio, Bill Nassen, who is one of the editors of this extraordinary new book called New History of South Africa. And I mentioned, Bill, that it goes right back to pre, I mean, there's notes here from 200,000 to 100,000 years ago when modern humans evolve in Africa. And you start your first chapter, which is called From the First People to the First Settlements, with the year 300. So it really is early. And then secondly, from the great eruptions to African nationalism, taking us from, what, 1800 onwards. You just realize what a history we have. We often speak about Europe having this great history.
Oh, yes.
But so often this history hasn't been written about.
Well, I perhaps not treat it in the way that it is here.
Yes, true, true.
I think in such a purposefully vivid, I think, you know, what we were trying to do in the book is to make it, to use that phrase, come alive.
Make it vivid, and hence
the copious illustrations and other material.
The other thing that's interesting,
to bring something of the atmosphere, I think, of the past.
Yes, and the photographs and sketches help that hugely.
Yes,
by the way,
and
there are some amazing black and white photographs that you've got from archives and things from later on. But one of the things that struck me also is you've got these boxes on some. Explain the point of that, with slightly different color print and all that.
Yes, I think.
Emphasizing something in the chapter.
You know, I think with many books you often have sort of appendices at the back where you've got material related to what's in the main narrative, and you can sort of pick up and elaborate at the end. And we thought in a book of this kind, it's easier to sort of incorporate it along with the main chapter material.
Okay. Now
that makes sense. So the boxes, in a sense, extend and amplify very specific things
within that chapter.
Which, so that the chapter sometimes isn't burdened with too much detail. You'll get lots of extra detail in the boxes. So it's a bit like, I don't know, you know, but like a bit of a cherry on the cake or or something.
And
like
you don't
that.
Have to constantly go to the back and find
your way. That's
it's
it.
Right,
so you
there
can
on the
you
page.
Can pick up and look at the box.
Yeah.
Or not, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the idea.
The other thing, when we were talking about the publication earlier, before we came into the studio, about how very nice it is, this hardback, you said there was talk of doing it soft cover, but that wouldn't have worked, would it?
Yes, not, I mean, I think originally the thought was that it would be done in softback.
Oh, really? That wouldn't have worked.
But I think once it got into production and it became the great big brick it is. I mean, it's a very large book. It's
700 pages.
Yes. That its lifespan in soft covers would be very limited.
I
think it's more
rather
enduring.
It's more enduring
in a decent hardback.
Absolutely.
With good paper and a little biblical lintel. I rather like that touch.
Yes, the biblical lintel.
Yes.
Well, whose idea?
I don't know where that came from, but some imaginative person in Tafelberg in production.
Well, there too, which is a great help if you're going backwards and forwards and not reading it from cover to
that's
cover.
That's it, actually.
But I don't think I asked you this at the beginning. I sort of asked you how this came about, but how long has the whole process taken to get it published? Onto the shelves. Was it a long process?
It involved some new material and then reworking of existing material to incorporate, you know, new findings and new readings and so on. So probably 18 to 20 months.
Oh, okay. So less than 2 years,
than 2 years.
Because I had visions of you people working away for years and years and years on end.
So we had the 2007, you know, which we talked about earlier.
That... to work
place.
On to kind of
as a basis. Sort of template or a basis. So, I mean, now I think of my involvement with the Cambridge history. I mean, that I thought was that would be in my tombstone. You know, here lies Bill Nassen. The Cambridge history has still not been completed.
Oh, you know, really?
Something like that. I mean, that really took.
In the course of your career as an academic, have you? We spoke about some of those books you have written, but has writing books been something special to you that you felt you needed to do?
Yes, I think any academic or so-called academic, in my case, or scholar.
Now, don't put yourself down.
No, I think you know. Obviously, you want to write books, and you want people to read them, and you want to provide some sort of educational role. But I think mainly I love writing. I love any kind of writing.
That's nice to know.
You know, I think it's like, well, it's like music or something. I mean, Charles Van Onselen, who's South Africa's greatest historian, once said to me that writing is the best form of therapy. It costs you nothing, so it's very cheap. And secondly, it's therapy with someone you can't stand, yourself.
Good grief. That's an interesting angle.
Interesting. So I do, I just love writing. So I do quite a lot of reviewing. I mean, I do quite a lot of book reviewing and other little pieces and manuscript reports. And for me, writing, yes, it's just an opportunity. Any opportunity to write, I will write.
And Bill, are you now that you're retired, are you still writing and editing and reviewing?
I am still, I'm doing all of those things. I'm not editing. I think that will be my last editing work. But I'm still reviewing and writing currently.
Yes. And missing university and missing
To be honest, no.
Yes, honest.
I think many people have said to me, oh, you'll miss lecturing and oh, you'll miss students. And actually, no, not that much. I won't miss marking, you know, all the marking. I won't miss invigilating exams. I won't miss meetings, endless meetings, which produce nothing really, you know.
Well, we all know.
Yeah, we all know that. Yes, and bureaucracy, and I think retirement is a time when one can enjoy a bit of freedom to do
which
things.
Which I hope you're doing.
I'm trying to, yes, to do the things I want to do rather than the things I feel I have to do out of obligation. You know.
But Bill, you said that you
more
were quite,
time for wine. And
yes, I was going to say you said that you were a wine enthusiast and whisky enthusiast.
Yes,
and
no,
so
I am. Yeah,
these are great hobbies, aren't they?
They are. No, they are. They are truly are.
I mean, treated responsibly. We are speaking responsibly here. And you did say
not being a sort of drunkie, you know.
No, of course, nothing like that.
No. But yeah,
the art, to appreciate the art.
Yes.
And I think you said to me also before we came into the studio that you wouldn't have minded being a wine taster.
I wouldn't have minded, but I mean, even more, I would not have minded even now just being a wine I mean, you know, not slaving away in the vineyards, but just working in a wine cellar and being surrounded by wine production and wine.
Gosh, so it really is a bit of a passion for you.
And yes, it's interesting, actually, because, you know, most of my life has been around, you know, rather rarefied books and libraries. Hasn't been unhappy, but I think some of the happiest working times in my life have been when I've been doing simpler things.
But you told me you worked on a farm.
I was an undergraduate student in Britain because I got a scholarship here and I went to Britain. And I worked on a farm in Norway for 3 consecutive summers on the same farm. As basically sort of student / cheap labor. And you stayed in the farmhouse with the farmer and his family, and you learned a little bit of snakker norsk. You learned a little bit of Norwegian. And I had it was very hard work. It was, you know, it was sort of July till September. And, of course, it's not quite the Northern Lights, but it never gets dark there.
Yes.
So you could walk around at midnight and, you know, just astonishing. But then I did, you know, I drove a tractor and I picked potatoes and planted Brussels sprouts and moved irrigation pipes. And there was something very earthy and fulfilling about that. And you ate a great deal and you worked very long hours and slept well. And you actually drank rather a lot too, because the Scandinavians do drink a lot.
They do, as
we know, they do.
And you're
the Norwegians drink a lot, and the Finns drink even more. Yes, one of my memories there was drinking vodka, Finnish vodka, with 2 Finns who'd come down from Helsinki.
They sound like wonderful times.
Yes, they were. You know,
and before you entered the rarefied.
I think that's it, actually. So a time when you could live like a prince, in a way, you know.
What's your next piece of music, Professor?
My next piece of music is the female vocalist I love most of all, Natalie Merchant. If I have anything to do with it, any music at my funeral will be Natalie Merchant. And it's an Andreas Fault, which I first heard in about 1990 or 91 when I was in America on a sort of visiting fellowship. Yeah, and it's about the San Francisco earthquake.
Oh, okay.
And it's the most wonderful song, really, about this glittery life you're leading and then underneath the ground's rotten, you know. So I love that sort of contradiction and dichotomy. Yes. So that's a thing. And also she has a voice that makes my flesh creep in a nice way.
Okay.
That's all I can say, you know. My flesh ripples, actually.
Yes, okay. I'll watch while we're listening.
Yes, yes.
Tear it down.
Well, now I'm interested, Bill. Did your flesh crawl or creep, whatever you said?
Well, it did. Yes, it always does, way. You know. Yes.
Natalie Merchant there and the Andreas Fault from Paradise is there, is the name of the CD. And there we had another choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Bill Nassen. And we're talking about this rather magnificent publication called New History of South Africa. Bill is one of three editors, Herman Chelyomi, Bernard Mbenga, and Bill. And one of the things I saw, because I have browsed a little bit through the introductory material, haven't gone any further, is where you say that from the later 17th century onwards, the Cape expanded as a colonial sphere, and in the course of its establishment of a social order within the first two centuries of its existence, two institutions played a crucial role. One was slavery until its formal abolition at the end of the 1830s, and the other was religion, overwhelmingly Christian, but also Islam. And those, if you think back, it sort of makes sense, that, doesn't it? Slavery and then religion has played a big role in this country.
Huge role, actually.
Both Christians and Islam. A passionate role.
Yes, I mean, South Africa is, you know, a very religiously-fied country, as we know.
And this was all as a result of the missionaries that came out.
Yes, so, I mean, you know, if you think of that sort of early period, you know, thinking of religion, I mean, the sort of Dutch arrived, and then you've got the Nederduitse Gereformeerde Kerk, which is what keeps them together.
Yes.
Their culture and their language and their sense of allegiance as a sort of settler population in a new land. That's where they are, a long way from where they come. And then, of course, the missionaries, you know, missionaries arrive later. And I think the interesting thing about, one of the interesting things, South Africa or the Cape is a very healthy place for Europeans. So the missionaries could come here in this nice Mediterranean sort of climate and very safe, you know, relatively safe, unlike some islands in the Pacific. There were no cannibals in the Cape. So some missionaries were eaten in the Pacific. It didn't happen here. And so the missionaries sort of thrived, and indigenous people had their, you know, social structures smashed or had disintegrated. And so they were receptive and ready for some sort of spiritual or other message to give them, you know, certainty in this chaotic, sort of confusing world.
Absolutely.
And so you had this sort of this great evangelical sort of thrust. And then some slaves, of course, were sort of alienated by Christianity, which didn't seem to be very keen on baptizing many of them, and then turned to Islam. And so at the same time, you've got, you know, the spread of Islam here in the Cape.
And especially in the Cape,
Especially in the Cape, It's a huge part of this country's history. Very much so. And if you think of, you know, if you think of these habits now in the Cape where you get wine guides and they'll have, and I think of this actually because slaves, or the names that slaves had were the names given by the owners or the traders.
Yes.
So slaves would simply be known by one name, never by two names. And you sometimes still today see pictures, sort of glossy pictures of the farmer who's called, you know, let us say, Apis Lapuskachni. and in the new South Africa, you'd also have the farm workers there. But there you would have Jim Peter, you know, you wouldn't have their full names.
Yes,
and it always strikes me that that's a kind of legacy of that era. That.
One of the questions I was going to ask you as well, Bill, was if I were to ask you what your favorite period was working on, what that would be. And you may be able to answer that, but I will save you from it if
well,
you like.
Well, not the present.
Okay.
yes.
Well, exactly.
Yes.
But you take the book right up to Chapter 15, Towards an Inclusive Democracy, and now a perplexing, challenging time, troubled times.
Yeah.
Where have we ended? So you've brought us right up to date with thinking now, political and historical thinking, with all the problems that we've had in the last 20 few years since 1994. Which gives...
It's not, you know, the land of milk and honey hasn't quite reached us yet.
And I'm going to ask you if you know why.
Oh, gosh. Shouldn't ask an historian about the present, Rodney. really is
no, no, sorry.
Very yeah, good.
I prefer the, you know, I think we, or I anyway, we prefer the deeper past. I mean, you're asking me what my favorite period is.
Yes, yes.
I think probably because I've always, you know, my interest in war is that period from the 1890s, from, or 1880s, let's say, mm-hmm. gold and industrialization.
And the Boer War.
And the Boer War, and the period up to Union is the period I am most familiar with and am most, remain probably most interested in. You know.
Is your interest in war still there?
Yes, yes, it is.
So are you following the Ukraine thing with a special interest?
I wrote a piece for this online literary journal, Litnet, about the Ukraine war. I got asked to write it and felt a bit uncertain because, you know, who am I, Bill Nassen here in Cape Town, writing about the Ukraine war. So you feel, what's that phrase associated with Lord Palmerston, you know, you be careful about sailing your gunboat into other people's waters.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. But I wrote a little piece, and there's a wonderful historian of the First World War and of Eastern Europe called Norman Stone. He's dead now. But in his History of the First World War, he talks about the Ukraine and Russia, or, you know, the end of the Tsarist period. And at one point he says, you know, it's important to understand that without the Ukraine, Russia is Canada, mostly snow. and he says, and with the Ukraine, Russia is the USA.
Oh my goodness.
I think it's about, you know, what the Ukraine's resources and so on. And that's a fascinating, I thought, I use that actually. It's a fascinating way to think about the present conflict, you know, why the Russians want to get their paws on the Ukraine. Yes.
And I always think to myself, you read about these wars, and there have been so many wars about, you wonder if there's been a world war going on for 4 years. But here in
South Africa, there's there are two famous books, actually, about which deal with that, which talk about, you know, the long world war. Mm. And they say 1914 to 45.
Wow.
They treat the period
as one war.
As one war, really. Yes. Yeah.
That's interesting. And you can see why, actually. But what I was going to say was, here in South Africa, since those days of the South African, the Boer Wars and all that, we haven't had a war. And we seem to be safe from wars.
No, it's remarkable, actually. That is.
Yes, it is.
That's such a good point that you brought up, that South Africa is comparatively, has been a remarkably safe place. Mm. You wouldn't think so.
No, well, we have our internal strife.
But, I mean, there's a wonderful history of Europe by Mark Mazzoa, and that's called The Dark Continent.
Oh.
Isn't that nice?
Yes.
Europe in the 20th century, and it's basically about the impact of the world wars and, you know, the Armenian Genocide and the Holocaust and so on. I used to use that in teaching when I used to teach war. And then if you think of South Africa, well, there was the Spanish flu.
There was COVID.
COVID. you know, there were these odd sort of disturbances. Mm. But actually, mortality has been, you know, life expectancy has gone up here and so on.
We're not being bombed and threatened.
Bombed and threatened, and there's really no, you know, so it's remarkably calm and safe place. apart from internal strife and all the chaos that surrounds us, but yes.
Well, it's been great to talk to you, and as always in radio, you know, one runs out of time. But I must congratulate you and your two colleagues on this book. I'm just going to mention it once again. It's published by Tafelberg, called New History of South Africa. Herman Chelumi, Bernard Mbenga, and my guest Bill Nassen were the editors. A fascinating list of writers as well. So have a look at it. Put it on your shelves and dip into it with your favorite whiskey, shall we dare say.
Yes.
Okay, before people think we've got, you know, alcohol problems.
Yes, well, no, that's true. We'll
What is your final choice?
My final choice is more jazz. It's Diana Krall, The Look of Love. And, she doesn't make my flesh ripple, but her voice is sort of sumptuous and satiny. And,
and she's hugely popular.
And, you know, when I used to commute from Rondebosch to Stellenbosch when I was teaching in Stellenbosch for the last 9 years of my working life. And I used to play a lot of Diana Krall going down the N2 to just take my mind away from what was around me until I turned off the end into the delights of Stellenbosch.
Oh, a lovely story to end.
Yes.
Bill Nassen, thank you very much for a fascinating chat.
Thank you, Rodney. It's been a treat and a privilege to sit here and chat to you. Thank you so much. Should I?
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.